Call to order. Let's bring this meeting of board trustees to order. Dr.
Pyges.
Pyges, I got asked ahead of time.
Dr. Pyges. Heavenly Father, we're gathered here with a shared purpose to guide and support this institution in service of our students and community. Today, we are especially mindful of the joy and pride that comes with the season of graduation. It is a time to honor the hard work, perseverance, and achievements of our students and to celebrate the promise of their future. May this meeting be filled with thoughtful discussion, mutual respect, and a renewed sense of purpose. Let the accomplishments of our graduates remind us why we do this work and inspire us to continue building a college that uplifts, empowers, and transforms lives. In your name we pray.
Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. Forward comment, Mr. Powers, do we have any?
We do not, sir.
Okay. Then we have President's report.
Thank you, Chairman. You have a report in front of you with a number of meetings and the people that that have been meeting with, especially in Tallahassee, to work on our legislative requests. But I just want to share one other thing besides those meetings to be highlighted, and that is a quick snapshot into the breakfast that I was fortunate enough to have with four of our outstanding graduate student nominees. Two of them, sisters, both 4.0 students, both basically do everything from every sport you can imagine, and every club and every volunteer activity, and both are on the track to the medical career field. They're not sure what yet, but I think we may see them again in the near future. The third student, not to be outdone, also a 4.0 student. He's been doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu since he was 6 years old, and his favorite things in life right now are Eastern philosophy and multivariable calculus. I don't know what that means, but it sounds hard.
And that's just for fun.
Just for fun. And then the fourth student, also not to be outdone, like I said, they're all four amazing. The fourth grew up in an Amish community, not in this state. Of course, was not allowed to study anything after a certain age, a very young age. I think 11, they told her to stop studying and started taking books from her. She eventually fled when she could, moved down to Florida. She was on the East Coast for a while, going to a different state college, was doing well. In order to put herself through college, she became a live-in caregiver for a 99-year-old for a year or two, and then for an 89-year-old. And while she's juggling all of that work and all of those challenges, putting herself also through college, I think also with a 4.0. So we have some great students and some great faculty. Hopefully those four all-stars that are their future. Well, you might love to hear those stories. That's all I got.
All right, thank you. And that brings us to the admission moment. Dr. Thomas.
She moved on past him, and it just so happened that summer he offered that level again, so he caught up with it. And it was the most phenomenal thing we've ever lived together, so just little things that happen in life that they happen. So let me show you a little bit about what we're going to talk about. My personal journey, it's unique. Florida's nursing shortage. I'm not going to try to scare you, but I'm going to try to enlighten you. Outcomes for the RN and BSN program when we have those sentences in front of you. Our NCLEX pass rates, which I can't talk now about those. Spanish speaking population in Florida, you might be surprised. Challenges of medical terminology and how that works with nurses and physicians and healthcare providers who don't speak the same language. The dual language program, which was launched from data that we had the students who were successful in a course. The SBA Nursing Foundation Scholarship recipient who's with me today to share a little bit about this. Okay, so I've said many, many, many times, I did it the most expensive, worst way. I don't know. My parents did not go to college, and I said, I'm going to go to that one. Well, what are you going to do? I don't know. So I get there. Not really sure what I was doing there. I thought I was going to do pretty well. And then all of a sudden, I cast the nursing zone. Yeah, I'm a nurse. And it just happened just like that. But I came out of there and used $1,000 a day. And a BSN. Wow, that's a lot of student loans to pay off. So I tell students all the time, if I have the opportunity to get in front of any high school student, and especially parents, who want their child to have that college experience, it's not worth $84,000. I can make not only an ASN, but a BSN, which is what I came out of Penn State as, in $16,654.56. That's taking them through all of their ASN program and their BSN program. That's a deal. That's a really big deal. So I think we need to do more marketing with that, because it's phenomenal. We're giving them everything with what some are going to pay for quarterly. So we need to broadcast this more. So I get it wrong, so I'm trying to help students to do it right. These are smaller than I want them to be, but I can share a little if you can't read them. We have a lot of vacancies here in Florida and Manatee County. 3,900 registered nurses are needed right now in Manatee County. Just at SMH alone, they have 356 openings. I can't produce that many nurses that quickly. So we have an urgent need for qualified nurses who are safe and can practice well out there. So how is SBF helping to address this nursing shortage? We've done a variety of things. The first thing we did was we increased our volume, our admission volume. We added a few programs, so we added the easy movement program to try to get those non-traditional students who couldn't pick up during the day in through the evening. And now we're adding a dual language program to try to get a different population who's struggling to get through our traditional program with some support and some help to get them through our dual language program. And I'll tell you more about that. The other things we've done, we've supported our upstream courses, because as we increase our volume coming through, our upstream courses are taking a big hit. You know, they usually teach two AP courses, now they're teaching four. So they needed more instructors. They needed more resources to teach the students. So with some of our line funding, we've been able to help those upstream courses to rev up so they can handle all the volume we're bringing at them. There's our AP statistics, all of our human development, micropsychology. What we're trying to do is increase our completion rates. For most schools, you'll find they want to, if it doesn't look like the student's going to cut it, let's just cut it, because that's a lot of work, right? So we're trying to create ways to make a nurse. So we're trying to get them completed. So we now have a completion coordinator. She does lots of tutoring. She tracks them through the process. And we're just trying to improve our completion rates. Usually completion rates and NCLEX pass rates are opposite. When your completion rates go up, your NCLEX pass rates go down. When your pass rates go up, your completion goes down. I want them level. So one day, our NCLEX pass rates will probably be in the low 90s, so low completion rates. And that's when I will celebrate, because I found that magic number to equalize those. Maintain our NCLEX pass rates. It's going to be hard to keep what we're doing right now. I'll show you. We want to bridge ASN graduates and a lot of students who really enjoy the process that they didn't go to a BSN school or a university. They're getting through hours in about eight semesters plus one summer. So we're managing that at $16,000 compared to 84. So it's a big difference. We're collaborating with our clinical partners, trying to identify strategies to increase resilience in graduate nurses. So this is something that's happening out there in nursing. It started around COVID, maybe a little bit before COVID. Could be a generational thing. We're trying to hold different approaches. We're getting them out there, but they're not staying a year. And it's not SCF. Ours are sticking, but nurses in general, graduate nurses are not staying. They're getting in there and they're like, I don't like this. What can I do? Get me out of here. What else can I do besides this? So that they leave. So then there's a bigger hole again. So we, our program never had a theorist. So in fact, we're like, oh, here she goes. So we have a theorist now. Her name is Newman, Betty Newman. And the premise is we thread resilience through our program as a thread. And responsibility and responsiveness. So as we're teaching them all about arterial blood gases and how to intubate a patient, we're teaching them how to be a resilient nurse, how to be a responsive nurse. And our clinical partners are really appreciating that because when they get there, they may not have that much work to do with them. So,
Dr. Zama?
Yes, sir.
Do you have any numbers on the percentage of nurses that go through it? Get the job and go, yeah, I don't like this, and then leave. I mean, it sounds like it's an issue.
It is. SMH has those numbers, but they cannot tease out SCF from the other schools.
Oh, okay.
So I've asked that education department. They're still trying to figure out the data, but if we hear about it, it's probably a significant issue out there because usually hospitals don't like to tell you they have it.
Problem.
So, we're still working with our partners. We have great partners, and we have an advisory board that they really tell us the truth. They tell us exactly what's going on, and we respond to that. We try to incorporate that back in what we do. Okay, so I'll take you through the process of how we're trying to improve our success outcomes. It starts with NCLEX pass rates, and if we can get them out there, if we can prepare them and get them out there, and at the right time, get them testing. And we've had a little bit of a problem with the State Board of Nursing. They're not testing if within that first 60 days. There's a delay in getting students through that process, and they're tested at 90, 120 days, and we did feel it in the first quarter. So, unfortunately, we had 7 out of 98 students to fail in the first quarter, but my data analytics gentleman who's working on were those students who were delayed or those students who were just missing the mark, barely getting by. So he's doing some of that data, but we've been seeing students complain, we can't get our authorization to test or we would have tested already. So working on that with the Board of Nursing, hopefully we'll get some traction there. Completion, making sure completion rates are always going up. We don't want to We want to support those students. We want to make sure we give them everything we can give them, provide them to get them through. And employment. We want them to be employed. Usually our students know the day they're pinned exactly where they're going. Occasionally you'll have one where they'll go back to the BSN program and not work right away, but that's rare. They're usually so excited to get their stethoscope and their uniforms and all the stuff. They do get out there first. A little bit about, freedoms. But the National Council, State Board of Nursing does produce the exam, and it's important to the student, and it's important to our program. It's important to the student because they may not practice as a registered nurse until they pass this test. To them, they can take it one or two or three times, however many times it takes. That just delays, buying a car or buying a house or whatever they want to do with their money. For us, it's hugely important for them to pass on the first try because that's how we calculate across the nation what nursing schools are producing students that can actually be nurses that are safe and caring and will be great practitioners out there. So we utilize that NCLEX pass data two ways. To look at how well we did with a particular student group and opportunities, our resources, our added textbooks, you know, the Olympic Pop product. We look at everything to see, did it help us? Did I do that already? Oh, it's okay. Let me go back. I'm sure. Yeah, so this is something really cool, except for the Olympic Pop. Since 2012, look at that thing. We're steadily just improving, 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 improving. And I got, oh, I can tell you, I got here right here. We were still doing great when I got here. And then the semester that I got here, and then COVID just took us out. And when I say took us out, I mean to the low 90s. There are some schools praying for the low 90s. So to us, the low 90s hurts my heart. So we have pushed through COVID, pushed through some of those pre-learning before they get to us issues, and we're almost through all of that. We're back up to normal and quick protocol. The worst part of that is we got to stay there. Just have to stay there. And This is busy, but I want to share something really cool. These are the 28 Florida College System schools and their NCLEX pass rates. And we are right here. We have some companies, but to be the very top is phenomenal. It's really cool.
May I ask a question on that? So, and these are for RNs, because do they have an NCLEX for different types of nursing, but this is the RN?
This is the RN. They have an LPN NCLEX test, and then they have the RN.
Okay. And I understand that the nursing program grew in number this past year, yes? So I would imagine as you expand your class size, and, you know, inherently that means it's not as competitive because you open more spots to more people. You know, that's the challenge between the community is saying we need more nurses, please educate more nurses, but then when that means you're maybe accepting people that if you had had a smaller class size, you wouldn't have accepted. I just want you to know that as a trustee, I see the tension in that, and that sometimes, as much as I love 99.44%, I think you, to serve the community better and in the long term might mean decreasing that number, as much as that's not what we want success to look like, but numbers can be misleading that way.
Absolutely. We know that the 150 students that we pulled in last fall, that's a challenge for us. And we know to get them through, they need twice the support than any other group that's coming through. We have a completion coordinator that's with them almost every day, helping them to navigate that, because we, instead of taking the top 40%, we took the top 60%. Mm-hmm. So we took this piece down here, may not complete and may not pass in class, but it's a chance we're going to take, because we have a completion coordinator. We put all these pieces in place to try to get them the support they need. So it's a risk, it's a gamble, but we're willing to take that gamble, because to have a certain number of students to graduate and that certain number of students to be successful, it's just, it gives back to our community something that no one else can get. And it's our role to do that. So we're time. Completion and NCLEX pass rates have to go together. Good point. Thank you. Okay. Want to give you a little bit of information about the number of people in Manatee and Sarasota County. In 2025, who speak Spanish, and then by 2040, we have a significant growth. So the dual language program, and I can tell you that in the next slide, I'll show you how it erupted the kind of thing, but it's needed. If you do not teach the people who are going to be taking care of the people in the hospitals that look and speak like them, then the people in the hospital are not going to have that trust of that healthcare organization. And if I go in and I'm speaking to someone who speaks Spanish in bed, and I'm getting it all wrong, the family is very frustrated with me. I have to go find somebody who speaks Spanish to come in. That's just very cumbersome for everybody. So to produce or to educate young men and women who can do it, there's just a little more support, a little different way of teaching them. It's going to be very valuable. Any questions about those numbers?
Are those Spanish-speaking only
again, sir? I'm sorry, I missed it.
That's all right. Is it Spanish-speaking only, that the 48,000 or whatever that is in Central County now, or are they bilingual?
Spanish-speaking only. Yes. I went to the article, what I got out of economic research, it was Spanish-speaking. So these are the students who come in who know just enough English to be able to do the application. And the upstream courses, they get through them, and they learn a little English, but by the time they come to us, they know just enough to not do well. It's really challenging. So dual language is coming. Okay. So communication challenges. Why this is important. When nurses experience challenges speaking with their patients, patient families, or other healthcare providers, communication in general is very hard in the hospital. If you do not get it right, someone dies. Can you imagine trying to get communication right if you don't speak the same language as the family? And I've often not spoken the same language as a physician. And that can get very scary as well. So for safety reasons, for care reasons, and for trust reasons, producing or educating students to become nurses who speak both languages can be extremely valuable. So we have valuable nurses and then valuable nurses who can work in an environment and speak both languages. So this is how this whole thing came about. If a student fails level 4, they come to see me. And semester after semester after semester, students who didn't speak English, they were barely able to explain to me what happened. You know, they asked, how did you study? Where's your support system? Did you have a job? Like all the things they never do. The tears would come and they didn't speak Spanish. I didn't speak English very well. I'm like, how'd you get to level 4? I mean, I don't know how I got there. So I started noticing this trend. We started to look at the data and we were not holding on to our dual language students who spoke mostly Spanish. So we had to identify a solution. And I'm not sure many of you would know her, but we have a nurse. Her name is Ingrid Roman Medina. She's a wild one, but she's wonderful. She's in Puerto Rico. She speaks Spanish very well and very quickly, and she speaks English as well. And she's been translating a lot for our Spanish-speaking students up till now. And we put us together, and then she said, let's do it. But we took the leap, and so we found a solution. Let's make a cohort of just Spanish-speaking students that, or anybody really who wants to maybe learn more Spanish or add a little bit of knowledge of Spanish. So anybody can be in that cohort. And then we had money available from the Lyme Fund, Lincoln Industry and Nursing Education. So pay for our faculty, extra faculty that we need to go through that, and some of the resources that we need. And those resources, we decided the student will buy their books in English, just like every other student buys their books, and then we purchase for them the same textbook in Spanish. So they're going to have two sets of books. So they'll look at it in English, and they'll look at it in Spanish. Hopefully that will help them to start to process some of the hearing content. So the other things we're doing is how we present content. I think that's on the next slide. This is some of the things we're doing. Language support for students, making sure that if they're not understanding any English, we're giving them both so that they can vice versa. And we'll hear Ingrid all the time in the hallway. A student will say, you know, I did horrible on this exam, in Spanish, of course. And I'm standing there going, what are they talking about back then? And then Ingrid will start, and by the end, the student will say, someone who spoke my language was able to tell me what I did wrong and how to get better. So we're doing a lot of work with Ingrid and how to make more Ingrids, or how to hire more Ingrids.
I understand that, but if we don't teach them English, we can graduate them this way, but how are we going to get them a job?
I can help with that.
Okay.
Next slide, I promise. So this is all the challenges, the ways we're addressing the challenge of having dual language students. So what we have planned, and we've looked at a couple different schools, not public schools, but private schools. There's a few private schools. one in Tampa. So it was modeling after them. There's two public schools in Arizona, and there's one other public school in New Jersey. And that's all the public schools that have a dual language program. So we're looking at the model, and what we're going to do is they have 6 hours of theory a week, 3 hours will be in English, and 3 hours will be in Spanish. So they have to figure out, you know, when they're in English, they have to process all that information in Spanish. When they're in Spanish, they have to process it to English. Everything they do in Skills Lab will be in English, but their instructor will speak Spanish. So if they're doing something and they get stuck, and they don't know how to say, I don't know how to do this or whatever, they have that instructor who speaks the language that can sort of get them through that crisis. The same thing on the clinical units will have an instructor with one that speaks Spanish. But because our clinical partners, we've never shared with them, we're sending in a bunch of students who don't speak English. That would be very nice. So on the clinical unit, they have to speak English. Unless they have a patient who doesn't speak English. So we'll sort of feel that out a little bit. But I think this plan for theory, skills lab, and clinical seems to be the one that's working out there. So currently hiring for skills lab instructors and clinical instructors who speak Spanish. And our first cohort begins in fall 2025. So very exciting.
Thank you, Salma.
Yes.
So if you, we have, the goal, it sounds like, is to make sure that they're actually bilingual, in medical terms anyway, by the time they go out. Because otherwise, I'm having a hard time envisioning how it works in a hospital setting. If you have a nurse that's great with Spanish, mm-hmm. and according to the Sarasota County numbers, I saw about 10% of our counties are Spanish-speaking only. So say it's that in the hospital, 10%. So 90% are not that. That's probably reflected, at least in the nursing population. But nurses need to communicate with each other. I mean, they're handing off stuff all the time. All of the stuff is in English. All of the written information is in English. So clearly, they have to be reasonably proficient in English, not just can get by. And I assume that that's what this is aiming at, is, and when you talk about they have to take the stuff in English, but they have a Spanish-speaking instructor. That's what we're focusing on. So otherwise, it seems like there could be all sorts of communication issues in the hospital on a daily basis.
That's why we speak English in clinical and in the skills lab. And if you've ever tried to teach a student who has been, they just don't get it, and then they start to get frazzled, if you have someone there that speaks Spanish that can take them aside and catch them up in Spanish, then you go back to the English version. It's this medical terminology that's harder than anything to translate over to Spanish and back to English. So they're going to have an English book in Spanish, so they'll be able to read both. And we decided when they're at Skills Lab, it has to be English, because they're going to be English in the hospital most of the time, and when they're practicing in the hospital, it has to be English. But give them the support they need instead of go with somebody that only speaks English. Then they're sort of stuck up there. So give them somebody who speaks Spanish.
Yes. Coming from the hospital board, and actually just having been at All Children Hospital last week, the problem is completely flipped. There are signs outside of patients' rooms that say Spanish translator needed. I can imagine, I totally see the challenges that you're envisioning where two nurses are not able to connect, but as it is right now, there's just not ability to translate to the family or to the patient. And so I'm sure there will be friction points, but at least that friction point will be a little bit further down the line, because right now patients can't get the services they need, nor can the families that are supporting that patient. But I think that's something that society as a whole will have to grapple with, and I really do think that this program is a step in the right direction, and some of those additional supports honestly then come to the hospital to help grease the wheels.
Is there, I know you talked about the funding, is there adequate funding for a dual language program? And is there a method for it through the state and all?
We have loan funding that we use to hire our instructors and a lot of our resources, all the textbooks for these first couple cohorts. And then we have some pipeline funds that we're able to use to fund forward. Grants are scary for me because if they go away, what do I do with my program that I want to continue? the moving forward. So that's when I came knock on Dan's door and Aaron Montgomery and Roberta Reed's door. Help me, I need to figure this out. Because if it's working, if the data suggests this is working, it would be very important. I do have to share, I can stop real quick and share a story that's very personal to me. I had a baby that was coming into Children's Hospital. I worked in the ICU and I worked a lot with transplant babies. And he came in, he was bright orange. He needed a liver transplant. And it was weeks and weeks and weeks. He did not get his liver transplant. And his ammonia levels were really high, skin bones were really high, renal levels. And we had to let him go. We had to help him peacefully die. We were waiting for parents to come from New York and they only spoke Spanish. I did take 3 levels of Spanish, but only because the teacher was in the Spanish Armada at the day, and I really liked it. So I did take Spanish, but I could not have told a family the baby's dying, and this is what we're going to do next. So I did my best, and at the time we had AT&T translators who were not very nice on the phone, and helped me to share with that family that their baby died. So I thought they were leaving the hospital, so I'm telling the whole story. But what we do, okay, so the baby has died in mom's arms. You take the baby and you put the baby in the body bag, and you're getting ready to take them down to the morgue. The mom and dad show up at the window wanting to see the baby again because they had just gone to the cafeteria. I didn't speak Spanish. I had no idea where they went. I thought they were leaving already. So then again, I got in there, gave that baby a complete bath, put him in his cute little onesie thing, put him back in a blanket, and handed him back to mom. Mm-hmm. It was just a very highlight in my life that I don't always know what these families are saying, and I could have, once you send a baby to the morgue, it's really hard to get them out. So it was horrible, but by chance, I was able to fix that one. So this goes a long way back to me, and I was a passion. So here's what I would like to share, and we did, Mr. Thompson alluded to, where are we going to get funds?
Dr. Soma,
yes,
at the end, you know, assuming the cohort works, now you've got students that maybe wouldn't have made it without the additional Spanish language support. At the end, I assume the NCLEX is still in English. They're going to have to prove proficiency in the language on the test.
Absolutely. And all the tests will be in English. Like every test we give them will be in English. We're not testing them in Spanish. We just give them the Spanish report that they need to teach them, but evaluate them in English. There is, in some of the legislation we've been looking at, there is one that in Florida that they claim that it pass rates are so terrible because the NCLEX is not in Spanish. Now they did change NCLEX to French for the Canadian group, but they won't change it for us for the Spanish group. So there's a lot of talk about that, but it will be in English for quite a while.
And then do you think you'll have any students that are just English only, for example, or maybe they took 3 semesters in high school and but want to get a little more exposure or work with the Spanish language. Do you think you'll have some people take the cohort from that side?
I hope so. I hope I see students who have just an interest in doing it a little differently and learning to help the community in a different way. So that's our goal, is to take anybody who wants to be in that program and help them to learn Spanish and English along the way and see how it works.
I just wanted to also add that anytime there's a language barrier in a hospital setting, the risk for adverse patient events, it goes up astronomically, and that is very, very costly for a hospital. So I predict that once the hospitals get wind of this, they're going to immediately see the downstream financial benefit of it.
Can you repeat one more time, how many other nursing colleges are doing this again?
Well, 1 in Tampa, that's a private school, Tampa Seven. And then there's 2 in Arizona that are connected to sister schools. Okay. But when you read about them, you call them, they support the student, but they don't, that's all, you know, maybe they have someone, I don't know what they do.
Yeah.
But they call themselves a dual language program. And then the one in New Jersey actually does what we're doing, but it's for the LPN. And that's the island student. So there's not a lot of stuff. So unfortunately, advertising for this program went out about 6 months too late. We wanted it to go out last April, May, and it didn't go out till October. So what that's going to do is it's going to push our really big group to 2026 because the students didn't have time to take AP1 and AP2 when they come into the program. We do have a few students who are, have already applied, but it's not going to be a big group of 20 like I want. So we might pilot this first group coming through and then hopefully the marketing and advertising will catch up and we'll have more students coming through. But my goal is to say, be patient with us. You've supported us. You've invested in us. You have made sure we have everything to sustain the ASM program, the transition program, the Ethan Weekend program, so far the cohort of this program, and our BSN program. So we're trying to give back to our community so that one day I'm going to be old. I want somebody really nice to take care of me who knows what they're doing. So that's my ask. But I would like to introduce to you Emily Goody.
Could I ask a quick question?
Yes, sir.
Just looking at your report here, why, so help me, in the basic program, the two-year program, the latest stats here, 22-23, you have a spring and fall completion rate of 81 and 75, and a large percentage, I'm assuming, go on to bachelor's. And then it drops to 49 and 52. So net out, do we pass about 40% from beginning to end? Or are these numbers a little deceiving?
No, they're calculated differently. So about 70% of our ASM students go on to be BSN students. And then in the BSN program, there's just a change with our accreditation. We used to be able to report 150% of the program as our completion rate. So they gave us not just four semesters, but two more, so our completion rates were higher. Our accreditors now pulled that back to 100%, so our completion rates plummeted, because we're working with students who are nurses already, working out their days and nights and weekends with families, so there's just a lot to pull them away from their studies. And the way the BSN program works, it's 5-week classes, which is really good for them. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing is we're offering now a full-time cohort and a part-time cohort so we can fix these completion numbers. Mm-hmm. And it's not that we're not doing it correctly. ASM, which is our accreditor, says, whatever you want to count, count it, but make sure you have a policy to do that. So 6 semesters will be our part-time, full-time, and 9 semesters will be our part-time. And that's what we're going to go for the completion rate. So you'll start to see as the years go by, the 6 and the 9, we should be able to hit that point. But we have students, and when there's a hurricane, our BSN students are the first one out the door because they're on those emergency calls. They're the ones that go into A or B teams, and they're not seen for weeks. So a lot of the students get incomplete, and then we have to catch them up. So we're very careful to work with those students, but those completion rates are not kind to us just because of policy change. If you have any other questions about the data that I shared with you, that's what we have posted on our website. I give anybody $100 if I can find it. Because I couldn't find it today. I had to call my admissions manager and say, where did you put it? It's in the strangest place, but we have to have it on there for accreditation purposes. But it just gives you a snapshot of what is what we can do.
Thanks, Emily. You're my favorite student.
You're welcome. I like to hear that. So I'm a product of parents who never went to college. They never graduated high school. Going to your nights and weekends program was very transformative to me because it allowed me, a full-time working individual, to go to nursing school, which is something that I had always dreamed of. From a young age, I watched my father battle stage 3 colon cancer. It was very transformative to me. I watched him go through chemotherapy and radiation, a lot of surgeries and procedures. And what mattered most, though, was the care from the nurses. They spoke to me in a language that I understood. They spoke to my father and they reassured our family. He's still alive and well today. Thank you to them. Getting my nursing degree here was something that was very important to me. I attended the second cohort of the 19 Weekends program, which I'm sure is thanks to a lot of you sitting here. Dr. Sawmill, you probably put up a lot of statistics here to prove why this should happen. You know, I'm not a traditional age student. I was in the medical field for 8 years, but I was not a nurse. I was on an LPN. I just couldn't make the money. I can't make ends meet. So having this program here, I can't thank you enough. And I hope it continues on. And I hope best of luck with your Spanish. I don't speak Spanish, but I can see how this will transform others' lives. This is a transformed mind. I was invited here to talk about some of the things, the five top things that I wanted you to know. I've already told you how the nursing program's changed my life. It's given me a clear and meaningful direction. It's not only equipping me with the skills and knowledge I need to succeed in healthcare, but what truly made this possible was the flexibility of the program, as I said before. I was able to work full-time and attend classes twice a week, 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. after I just worked all day, sat in a very chair. On clinicals, Saturdays, 12 hours, I'd be in a hospital, whether it's Manatee Memorial, Lakewood Ranch, Sarasota, or hospice. I was sent for a rotation, which was very meaningful to me. I also wouldn't be standing here without some of the scholarships that I achieved through the foundation. All the work that goes out to get the donors, they go to students like me, and other students as well. They help change our lives. With the scholarship, as you may know, you have to write about yourself. Write who I am, my background, my goals, my dreams. And to be selected for those scholarships tells me that other individuals believe in me, and they believe in my mission. That's very impactful. That kept me going each and every day. You know, I'm not only doing this for me and for the future patients, but there's people here now today that believe in me. They tell me that I can do this. You know, I'm part of a strong and supportive community. Through this program, I found not just classmates, but a true community of mentors, instructors, and peers who are deeply invested in success. Success of students, graduation, success for people like me. The nursing faculty at City College of Florida go above and beyond to ensure we're not only learning the material, but we're truly prepared for the realities of patient care. One of the most impactful parts of my education has been through the high-quality clinical experiences, where I gained hands-on skills that built the confidence to care for patients in diverse settings. I worked in ERs, ICUs, oncology units, all kinds of places in the hospital. I got a really well-rounded clinical experience here. I can't rave about that enough. My goal is to give back. It's not only shaped my career path, but it's also transformed my personal goals. I've been deeply inspired and motivated by the incredible faculty who guided me. And because of them, I now help to follow in their footsteps. Not only do I want to have a background in oncology to help other families go through some of the things that I've experienced, but I hope to join the faculty here someday in the future. Currently, I'm enrolled in the BSN program. I actually started in the middle of the ASN program through the fast track to help me get that a little quicker. My goal is to get a master's degree in education because I want to be a part of teaching the future generations. I think it's very important. SCF nursing is helping shape the future of healthcare. I just want to highlight how vital the nursing program at State College of Florida truly is. Not just for students like me, but for the entire community. The program is rigorous. It really is. There's a lot. I promise. It really is. But it's compassion that you see through here, through the people that I interacted with, the faculty, the foundation. Some of your patients I recognize, and some of you I know, I may not have directly spoken to, but your efforts have gone into producing individuals like me. By supporting the program and the scholarships that make it accessible, you're directly investing in the future of healthcare. Every graduate of this program enters the workforce ready to serve, ready to care, and ready to make a difference. My cohort, there was 22 students. A lot of us are not traditional age. Some of them in our 30s with children. Some of them in their 50s. But we all had a goal. It was hard. We came from work. You had somebody that was a HVAC technician. There's a shower in the other building, so he wouldn't smell. He would take a shower there every day before class. We wanted it, and we got it. It was through your support and guidance and our faculty each and every day, pushing us to do the best that we could. So I can't thank you enough.
Emily?
Yes.
You make SCF very proud.
Yes.
And you also are a very good public speaker.
Yes.
You'll do well as an educator.
Yes. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, it's not one of my strong suits, but I'm really working on it, I promise.
You wouldn't know. Wow, you're extraordinary. Keep telling your story, and I love how much you wanted it, and you'll get it. You'll keep getting it. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you. I just want to take a moment of personal privilege on the nursing program here because I've had the double-edged joy in that of being in Memorial Hospital a few times, sometimes more serious and longer than I would want. And the nurses, I would ask many of them when I would think of it, where did you get your nursing degree? But probably half of them were SCF. And I will say that the quality of the nurses at SCF and the others too make all the difference to somebody from the patient side being in the hospital. Because, you know, I got to tell you, and I told this to doctors too, it's like doctors are kind of so-so, to be honest. And they're very in, out, boom, boom, done and done, moving on. And that doesn't mean they're not great at what they do necessarily. But it's the nurses that take care of you and are there through the night, doing all the things, and are able to create relationships and with people that are just rotating through all the time. They're creating relationships. And I was so impressed with so many of the graduates from our School of Nursing here that, I mean, I don't need any of this tip for me to know that this needs all the support we can give it, because the data shows that we need it. The personal stories show it. The importance of it. But, you know, from the other side, there's probably others in here that have been patients too. You know, it's an imperative to have high quality, high functioning nurses in a medical system. And I think that's what we're churning out here. And so, big fan. And thank you.
Let me add to that just a second. At Nancy Memorial Hospital, where I'm a board governor, our students constantly are the number ones in their classes, clinical. And we are sought after everyone we can get for our employment. They're constantly better trained and ready to assume professional roles in our hospital. So we're very proud of that at Matthew Memorial.
Okay. On to approval of non-financial consent agenda items. Anything to be pulled? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion second, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion passes. Approval of financial consent agenda. Anything need to be pulled from this?
I do have a couple questions on Exhibit E.
Exhibit E? Okay, I have a couple on Exhibit I, so we're going to pull E and I. Any others? All right, seeing none, I'll take a motion to pass the rest of the financial consent agenda.
Motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. It passes. Taylor?
These are frankly easy questions. I was curious on page 20, the increase due to establishing budget for new pre-apprenticeship grants for $80,000. Can you describe a little bit about that grant and what is a pre-apprenticeship? Not heard that term before.
Interesting. Yeah. It functions with the CDL programs. So.
Oh, okay.
It's just helping the students, I believe, get into pre-apprenticeship, and there's two. I have the name of one of them in my computer, but one deals with Publix, getting them into apprenticeship things there with driving with Publix, and another is distribution of flour, I believe, but two different.
Oh yeah, there's the flour basin. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. But what pre? So do they do another apprentice, pre and then apprentice?
I believe that the program with the CDL is prior to the actual apprenticeship that they would go into with the, okay, with the driving once they use.
How many does that fund?
That's a good question. I can
not,
get back
not that,
to that.
Yeah, not that you need to know. I'd just be curious what $80,000 buys.
Yeah.
And then the increase for New Year Italian grants budget, mm-hmm, I was curious what that is, and can I go?
No, that's...
So the grant comes from the Italian consulate in Miami, and
really?
It funds faculty here to teach Italian and some other courses that go with it for a certificate that they have put
okay
together out of those. But
you can go to the class if you want.
Yeah.
We can definitely get you enrolled in those Italian
for
consulates.
Sure.
Absolutely.
On that note, does the Spanish consulate give any grants?
Not to date, no. We could try to... But
you
see
go
if the Italian consulate will pressure them. Equal that out.
Okay,
I'll get some information back on how many students that funds.
Yeah. Okay. That's all I have.
Since you pulled it, I just have a question on page 13 of it. Because I feel like if I'm looking at these numbers, it's sort of the same issue I raised at the last meeting, where the three bullets at the top there, the second two expenses is 65% of the budget, which is higher. And then the next bullet down has revenues are higher, but expenses are lower. Is that correct, or do we have an issue with those? I only have to raise it because we just need it right. It is not correct to make sure it's made correct when we vote on it.
The wording in it is correct. What it is saying, there's that $8.3 million transfer we made from Fund 1 to Fund 7 for facilities for repairs and those type of items we've got going on. And because of that, it shows in the expense categories. So if you look at the actual numbers, it looks like our expenses are higher than our revenues, but they are not. It's
okay.
Just that transfer.
Okay. I understand. Thank you. Okay. Then we have a motion to approve Exhibit E.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
Motion second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. Motion passes. Good. Aye. Page. Got it. Page 35. It's a chart, so it's easier to look at if you want. Operating revenues, student tuition and fees net. An increase from 22-23 to 23-24 looked kind of like a lot when I didn't recall that our number of students enrolled went up, but I'm wondering if that's because, or went up that much, if that's because 22 or 23 still has a bit of the COVID hangover in it, is or what? Is that the explanation? Or
it's a combination. Maybe I'll speak ahead of me. A combination of that, we also increased school enrollment. Mm-hmm. We had a more increased population. So that little enrollment number.
Okay, so then the total student enrollment is larger.
Correct.
And that's what's
reflected. And it's going to be your trickle effect for persistence and retention. Mm-hmm. So that fallout, and then we're trying to play catch up with the incoming class while still doing the stop out work.
Okay.
So we did see the increase.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And just on page 36, there's a typo.
I'm so sorry. I'm really good with numbers.
Well, no, there's a typo in the numbers.
Oh, yeah.
It says 20,232
Oh, yeah.
It's 23. It's just minor detail.
Oh, we'll get that fixed. Thank you.
I didn't see it. I only saw it because
the year.
Yeah.
It's like new math.
Yeah. Okay. That's all I have on it. So I'll move Exhibit I. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Motion and second. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed nay. Motion passes. We are on to, Chris, do we need Exhibit J or not? Is that just the informational one? We usually don't have the exhibit under it there.
Yeah, no, it's just informational.
Okay. Well, clearly, I'm never going to get it right. All right. Old business. Is there any old business that comes to the board? Seeing none, new business?
Here's one issue I wanted to bring up, if I could, real quick. Back when I first came on the board, I talked to Carol one time, Dr. P, the original Dr. P. And I said to her, if you had had as much money as you needed, what would be your vision for the college? What would you want to see happen? And in that discussion, she said, what I'd like to see happen is that this campus be converted into pure nursing. Have all the nursing students on one campus. We are at 440. We're at 440 now. We were somewhere around 280-ish at that time. The drawbacks to that were professors driving distances, students might live in Venice or whatever, but with I-75 corridor, she was hoping that would be remedied. But what really remedies it is the advent of a parish campus. Because now, parish is now 10 miles away, right down Lakewood Ranch Boulevard.
About a half hour drive, I think.
Half hour drive, maybe 5 hours by the time we get it built. And the reason I'm bringing it up is that we're going to be expending a great deal of money on parish for nursing school. So now we're going to have nursing in Bradenton, in Parrish, and in Venice, and here. Instead of having it all under one roof. Now, I'm sure it's a complex issue, more complex than I'm letting it sound like, that needs to be studied. But it does have merit in that the former president of the college thought that was her number one goal if she had all the ability to do what she wanted. And I can see, and I haven't discussed this with the nursing staff or anything, I'm just talking out loud, because I have a meeting on May 7th to discuss in depth what's going on at Parrish. I can see how it would be better if we could have all the nurses on this campus. What we'd have to do, however, we'd have to take whatever other classes are offered here and move them to Parrish. Well, I can see overnight how that would help us because enrollment, you know, those kids would go there for whatever math or English or whatever they're taking here now, because the entire campus would have to be converted to just education and nurses. I'm not asking for us to debate it tonight, but it is an interesting concept that came to mind when we were walking through the simulation center over there. Because I do think that there is a certain value in having everybody under one roof in the nursing program. There is a certain value of not spending the money at Parrish to have duplication of services 10 miles away, or 12 miles away, or wherever it is. Maybe something that Tommy, you might want to think about. And I don't know what it would affect the Venice people. I don't know how many kids we got in Venice, but I assume they have to come up here for simulation anyway, right? So they do come here. So they do come up here X amount of time anyway. I don't know, do the professors come up here for any reason?
Maybe.
So there is some crossover effect here, and if it can make us a better college and help our medical staff create better nurses, it might be something we ought to think about, even if it's long range. I certainly don't think we need to have duplication of services on the parish and Lakewood Ranch campuses, because it's a straight shot between the two. And I can see students going back and forth all the time anyway. Now going back into Bradenton, that's a different story. Going to Venice, I can see how it's a bit of a tough ride. But Parrish, that's right down the street. And I think we ought to think about this a little bit. Maybe a study group of your folks, Brian, I don't know, but it seems like to me it might be a worthwhile thought process. That's all I got.
Thank you, sir. Well, it's certainly an idea that we'll explore, look at in our evaluation. We actually just recently, and I'll ask Dr. Rand, not now, but maybe at the next board meeting, to bring something that I think is very useful for all of us to review from time to time, and that is every degree offered at every campus, so that you can see, and it gives us a platform to begin that sort of exploration and analysis, what we offer at each campus.
It could be a completely off base too, I don't know, but Dr. P thought a lot about it.
That makes sense to me.
The original Dr. P.
Yeah, the original.
Number two.
Yeah, we have P1 and P2 now.
Pappas, Pro 2.
You're P2.
P3.
P3?
Pappas.
Oh, gosh.
Thank you. All right, thank you.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Yeah, Chris. So we're going to review the design next week, Trustee Goodson. And you're going to see that we've probably only got, out of the 42,000 square feet, about 1,000 square feet set aside. What is it, Dr. Sawmill? 8 beds? The rest of what you're going to see are general lab space, classrooms. So there's not a huge amount of investment in the big scheme of things in that building. But we'll look at that.
Thank you. Any other new business? Trustees? All right, seeing none, we have the SDF Foundation update for December.
I'd like to make sure that you're fully aware of our line partners and the significant amount of years that they have been giving, which includes Sarasota Memorial Hospital at the tune of over $100,000 a year, Manatee Memorial Hospital, and Manatee Memorial Foundation, over $100,000 a year, as well as Tidewell Hospice, Empath Health, at $100,000. And then we also have the Lakewood Ranch Medical Center, which gives $100,000 per year. HCA has come on with us, and sometimes they don't. They've been more volatile in their support of the LINE program that Dr. Sawmill kindly suggested. And then through the power of philanthropy, which is not matched, the Baranczyk Foundation did nearly $500,000 to help launch the evening and weekend nursing program, because they believe so much in what our nursing college has been doing here, they were willing to go out on a limb with something that never existed at State College of Florida. It was a very high stakes ask, but they were willing to do that because they knew we deliver on our promises when we were talking about the evening and weekend college. So those are just some of the very large foundations and organizations that have truly supported our nursing program, which is quite significant. Because as you know, there's a lot of competition, and other institutions in our region have made promises and not delivered as far as launching a new nursing college and things like that. So there's a large level of trust. If we look at some of those individuals that love scholarships because they love students like Emily Goody that have supported her and her educational journey, that includes the William and Marie Selby Foundation Scholarship, the Betty and Jane Steele Nursing Scholarship, the Linda Kiever Scholarship for Nurses, John and Arlene McKendrick Scholarship, and several pass-through scholarships, from the Community Foundation of Sarasota County, as well as the Palmer Women's Club. So those are the donors that have supported Emily through our partnership, and that is where you really see that dynamic connection that we have, connecting donors to our outstanding students and programs. And so that's what we would love for you to share, and you, and for doing that, we would love the success. We just came off of our evening under the stars, which was a great opportunity. opportunity for us to share with the Venice community our mission. And we had a student talk about his success being one of the first graduates this May from our music production AS degree. And so the donor that was there that launched that degree was there that evening. So there was a lot of pride to see those students and their first cohort graduating this May. One of the things the board of directors would like to do is launch an event here on the Lakewood Ranch campus to educate our East County about the great things that State College of Florida is doing at this location. So we're going to call that a sip and snoop. And we would like for you to invite your friends to sip and snoop and learn about our health science programs and our nursing program. So this will be June the 12th. This will be easy in and out, but we're planning to do it in a fun and engaging way. Our goals are listed on the back. We would like to host individuals that are interested in potential committee work, which is hard work. Fundraising is very hard work, but we want the community, that people that you know that love to live, work, and play in Lakewood Ranch to attend, learn more about us, but we also would like them to volunteer for committee work, because next year we would like to have a fundraiser, and we would like to do that in the Lakewood Ranch community. That's all I have for this evening. And I hope to see you at the
Sippy Soup. Thank you. All right, we are to board comments. Let's just go around the room. We'll start with Mark. If he has any more.
No, I got enough.
Okay. Great presentation on nursing. I love the idea of bringing all these different departments in. I learned a lot through this, so it's kudos to you and great job, Emily. And I hope I never see you in the hospital. But if I go, I hope you're in.
I concur with the nursing presentation. Emily did a wonderful job. And I'm a recent graduate as a patient in March at SMH. And the care was absolutely amazing. And you're right about doctors. They just kind of get to the point and run it in and out. So what gives you the feels is really what the nurses do. And it's amazing. And a good idea, I hope I don't have to go in, but next time I go in, I'm going to do a survey of where they went to school.
Right.
And it's great to uncover these programs here. And, I'm very impressed with the results. And I'm also curious as how we can make them better. So it's good. I'll lean in a little bit more on this. Great.
Great presentation. Thank you, very informative. Emily, it's always a highlight to have a student come and speak with us. And, you know, we know that you're taking your time out of your day to come do this. And it is, and I speak as a trustee, but also helping with the foundation. It is hard work to raise money, but it's so satisfying to see someone like you where that effort is being poured into. So, hats off.
Thank you, President Gregory, for hearing my desire to share Dr. Samal with everyone else. I just really loved meeting with her about a month or so ago. And that was just enriched all the more by you, Emily. I have to say, the people I really want to get to know now are the Florida Nursing Board. Like, the holdup for authorization is really unacceptable. I think about how students study for the SAT and then they take it. I mean, in what other profession or entrance exam would you ever wait 3 months to take a test? Of course you're not going to do as well as if you could take it immediately. So I see that as a major action step, but very proud of what you're doing.
I don't know if I'm allowed to ask this, but Ellen, where are you working now?
Currently, I just accepted the job at Hospice.
At Tidewell?
Yes. I'm at Hospice. I'll be in the Lakewood Ranch Hospice House.
That is a huge calling. I greatly commend you for taking that on. That is a blessing and
somebody like you help is, I have no words. I think that's amazing. That's a testament, I think, to what the nursing program does, to be able to teach the nursing students about how powerful hospice is. A couple of comments on Dr. Salmal, are you aware of the Dreamers Academy in Sarasota?
I am.
No, they're a K-8 dual language public school, and I would love to connect you if you're not already connected. Yeah, I know Dr. Pija just visited there as well, and I assume you were impressed.
Absolutely.
They're
and they work with education department.
Right. They are.
Yeah. She oversees education as well.
They are a fundraising team, and I'm so excited to hear about Barancic with the 500,000. How do we get SMH and Tidewell and Manatee Memorial to get up to that level of the 500,000? Why is a private foundation funding more than our hospital partners? I just, that was a little shocking to me, in the fact that we are providing their best employees.
It took a lot of work to get the 100 grand.
Aren't you on that board?
And I don't have the guts to go back for more.
I am happy to stand with you. I think SMH, if you could invest in a nonprofit hospital, you would invest in SMH.
You're not allowed to go
with
back.
Their cash cow. So I am, and the fact that they just opened their education building, which is phenomenal, Kulchowski, they're wonderful, wonderful people. But I would love to have that goal with you, Sandra, is in getting them up to the same level as a private
committee member.
Yeah.
Well, it was, as you know, they're all very highly competitive with each other.
Yes,
so,
exactly.
It was
so, Mark,
a very, now
who
they,
can get
they
five?
Have done this for 3 consecutive years,
yeah.
So we are asking them again, if the Florida legislature does provide the match, you know, that would be nice, but to get them to that 105,000 was very challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to help if you can.
Okay.
I'd be happy to ask.
I would love to be an
I can take a note.
Taylor, you think these financials are tough?
Yeah.
You gotta look at the hospital's financials.
I am hugely aware of the hospital's financials, at least SMH, not Manatee Memorials, but
well, we're a lot worse because we don't get $50 million in ad valorem taxes.
That's what I'm saying.
We don't get. Don't get.
I know. So SMH, I am more experienced.
SMH, yes. They could, that's a rounding error for them.
Exactly. So would $500,000 be a rounding error to them? So,
5 cents.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like the former hospital board member is really quiet.
They separated them.
There's a lot of things I could say. This is a public meeting, and I'm happy to have those conversations privately. My dad was on the SMH hospital board, so we're very familiar with the inner workings as well. So, but yeah, no, great, great presentation. Love it.
Yep, appreciate it. I've had my say on the nursing program, I think. So, if there's nothing else, we are adjourned.